This is John W. Whitehead, author of Battlefield America, The War on the American People, bringing you a message about the state of our nation. We labor today under the weight of countless tyrannies, large and small, carried out in the name of the national good by an elite class of government officials who are largely insulated from the ill effects of their actions. We, the so-called middling classes, are not so fortunate. We find ourselves badgered, bullied, and browbeaten into bearing the brunt of their arrogance, paying the price for their greed, suffering the backlash for their militarism, agonizing as a result of their inaction, feigning ignorance about their backroom dealings, overlooking their incompetence, turning a blind eye to their misdeeds, cowering from their heavy-handed tactics, and blindly hoping for change that never comes. The overt signs of the despotism exercised by the increasingly authoritarian regime that passes itself off as the U.S. government are all around us. Warrantless surveillance of Americans' private phone calls and email conversations by the NSA. SWAT team raids of Americans' homes. Shootings of unarmed citizens by the police. Harsh punishments meted out to school children in the name of zero tolerance. Drones taking to the skies domestically, endless wars, out-of-control spending, militarized police, roadside strip searches, roving TSA sweeps, privatized prisons with a profit incentive for jailing Americans, fusion centers that collect and disseminate data on Americans' private transactions, and militarized agencies with stockpiles of ammunition, to name some of the most appalling. Yet, as egregious as these incursions on our rights may be, it's the endless petty tyrannies inflicted on an overtaxed, overregulated, and underrepresented populace that occasionally nudge a weary public out of their numb indifference and into a state of outrage. Consider, for example, that federal and state governments now require, on penalty of a fine, that individuals apply for permission before they can grow exotic orchids, host elaborate dinner parties, gather friends in one's home for Bible studies, give coffee to homeless people, let their kids manage a lemonade stand, keep chickens as pets, or braid someone's hair. A current case before the U.S. Supreme Court, Nying versus Tomlinson, strikes at the heart of this bureaucratic exercise in absurdity that has pushed overregulation and overcriminalization to outrageous limits. This particular case is about whether one needs a government license in order to braid hair. In Missouri, anyone wanting to braid African-style hair and charge for it must first acquire a government license, which at the minimum requires the applicant to undertake at least 1,500 hours of cosmetology classes costing tens of thousands of dollars. Incredibly, Tennessee has fined residents nearly $100,000 just for violating its law against braiding hair without a government license. In Oregon, the law is so broad that you need a license even if you're planning to braid hair for free. The mere act of touching someone's hair can render you a cosmetologist operating without a license and in violation of the law. In Iowa, you can be sentenced with up to a year in prison for braiding hair without having attended a year of cosmetology school. Almost every aspect of American life today, especially if it's work-related, is subject to this kind of heightened scrutiny and ham-fisted control, whether you're talking about aspiring bakers, braiders, casket makers, florists, tour guides, taxi drivers, eyebrow threaders, teeth whiteners, and more. For instance, whereas 70 years ago, one out of every 20 U.S. jobs required a state license. Today, almost one in three American occupations requires a license. Overregulation is just the other side of the coin to overcriminalization. This is the phenomenon in which everything is rendered illegal and everyone becomes a lawbreaker. This is the mindset that tried to penalize a fisherman with 20 years jail time for throwing fish that were too small back into the water. John Yates was a commercial fisherman was written up in 2007 by a state fish and wildlife officer who noticed that among Yates' haul of red groupers, 72 were apparently under the 20-inch legal minimum. Yates, ordered to bring the fish to shore as evidence of his violation of the federal statute on undersized catches, returned to shore with only 69 grouper in the crate designated for evidence. A crew member later confessed that, on orders from Yates, the crew had thrown the undersized grouper overboard and replaced them with larger fish. Unfortunately, they were three fish short. Sensing a bait and switch, prosecutors refused to let Yates off the hook quite so easily. In prosecuting him for the undersized fish under a law aimed at financial crimes, government officials opened up a can of worms. Thankfully, the U.S. Supreme Court, in a rare and narrow flash of reason, sided with Yates, ruling that the government had overreached. That same overcriminalization mindset reared its ugly head again when police arrested a 90-year-old man for violating an ordinance that prohibits feeding the homeless in public. Arnold Abbott, 90 years old and the founder of a nonprofit that feeds the homeless, faced a fine of $1,000 and up to 4 months in jail for violating a city ordinance that makes it a crime to feed the homeless in public. Under the city's ordinance, clearly aimed at discouraging feeding of the homeless in public, organizations seeking to do so must provide portable toilets, be 500 feet away from each other, 500 feet away from residential properties, and are limited to having only one group carry out such a function per city block. Abbott had been feeding the homeless on a public beach in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, every Wednesday evening for 23 years. On November 2, 2014, moments after handing out his third meal of the day, police reportedly approached Abbott and ordered him to drop that plate right now, as if he were carrying a weapon. Abbott was arrested and fined. 3 days later, Abbott was at it again and arrested again. It's no coincidence that both of these incidents, the fishing debacle and the homeless feeding arrest, happened in Florida. This is also the state that arrested Nicole Ganey for free-range parenting when she let her 7-year-old son walk to the park alone, even though it was just a few blocks away from their house. If convicted, Ganey could have been made to serve up to 5 years in jail. As if criminalizing fishing, charity, parenting decisions, and haircuts wasn't bad enough, you can also find yourself passing time in a Florida jail for such inane activities as singing in a public place while wearing a swimsuit, breaking more than 3 dishes per day, farting in a public place after 6 p.m. on Thursday, and skateboarding without a license. We asked our lawmakers to be tough on crime, and we've been saddled with an abundance of laws that criminalize almost every aspect of our lives. So far, we're up to 4,500 criminal laws and 300,000 criminal regulations that result in average Americans unknowingly engaging in criminal acts at least 3 times a day. For instance, the family of an 11-year-old girl was issued a $535 fine for violating the Federal Migratory Bird Act after the young girl rescued a baby woodpecker from predatory cats. We fell for the government's promise of safer roads only to find ourselves caught in a tangle of profit-driven red light cameras, which ticket unsuspecting drivers in the so-called name of road safety while ostensibly fattening the coffers of local and state governments. Despite widespread public opposition, corruption, and systemic malfunctions, these cameras, used in 24 states in the Washington, D.C. area, are popular with cities across the country, which look to them as an easy means of extra cash. This is what happens when the American people get duped, deceived, double-crossed, cheated, lied to, swindled, and conned into believing that the government and its army of bureaucrats, the people we appointed to safeguard our freedoms, actually have our best interests at heart. It's time for a bracing dose of reality, America. Wake up and take a good hard look around you and ask yourself if the too-good-to-be-true version of America being sold to you, crime-free, worry-free, and devoid of responsibility, is really worth the ticket price. Nothing less than your freedoms. The Rutherford Institute is doing its part to push back against the police state and make the government play by the rules of the Constitution. But we can't fight these battles alone. To join the resistance and help us spread the word, start by liking this video and subscribing to our YouTube channel. Visit our website at www.rutherford.org to check out our library of thought-provoking commentaries, legal resources, and so much more. Subscribe to our email alerts and I will send you my weekly commentary, Rutherford Press alerts, and a weekly rundown of pertinent headlines and news articles to keep you apprised of the growing threats to our freedoms. And finally, if you are able, please consider making a tax-deductible donation to the Rutherford Institute by again visiting us online at www.rutherford.org or donate using PayPal. Your donation allows the Rutherford Institute to push back against the government's power grabs, corruption, and ongoing assaults on the Constitution. Together, we can make America free again.